All right, we're continuing on here with our conversation about sort of the native side of the house for parallelism and concurrency. How are you doing, Dana?
I'm doing great, Charles.
So tell people who you are. They're going to get. They're going to know you very well.
Okay. Yes, you need to look at your other videos as well. Dana Groff. I'm a program manager in the parallel computing team here at Microsoft, working on the concurrency runtime and the parallel patterns library and asynchronous agents.
Excellent.
My name is Arthur Lotsberg. I'm a dev lead on the concurrency runtime working with Dana and those folks.
I'm Vinod Subramanian. I'm a tester in concert.
I'm Mike Chu. I'm a developer in the concurrency runtime.
Excellent. So what are we talking about today in this segment?
So today Vinod wants to tell us about the new parallel algorithms that we're putting into the PPL.
Excellent.
Okay, so why don't you...
And they can download them today.
Okay.
Right. So you know, we're going to keep pointing you at the whiteboard there. These are in the concurrency extras, the concert extras, or sometimes we call it sample pack.
Okay.
And it's they're all template files, header files. You can get them today and take a look.
Excellent.
So I guess you have already seen the talk on PPL tasks, which Mike and Arthur and Dana we were talking about. That talks about the task parallelism side of what we'd be shipping in the sample pack. Mm. Now, PPL, the parallel patterns library, consists of task parallelism, consists of parallel algorithms, and containers. Now, traditionally, in Visual Studio 2010, containers we shipped was concurrent queue and concurrent vector.
Okay.
And parallel, this is just so that you can relate to what we're talking about here. The parallel algorithms are something like parallel for, parallel for each, and these were...
Parallel invoke.
Yes, thanks, Dana. And the task parallelism was like task groups and structured task groups. This pretty much sums up what the PPL layer of Visual Studio 2010 was. Now, in the sample pack, we would be introducing more of these. We introduce PPL tasks over here for task parallelism. We introduce parallel transform, parallel reduce. I'll just circle back on that a little bit. And parallel sort. We actually introduced three versions of the sort, and we'll go through that as well. And we've introduced concurrent maps, concurrent unordered maps, multi-maps set, and multi-set. Let's tackle the algorithms first. Now, parallel transform is very similar to std transform. In fact, it's got the same look and feel. It's got a begin, and then again a begin and the func. So you can, if you had a transform, std transform, sform, all you have to do is just slap a parallel in front of it, and bam, you're done.
Well, you have to say using the concurrency name.
Of course, this is under concurrency samples, if it's in the sample pack. And yes, of course, you need to make sure that your function is concurrency safe and that there are no races or data races over there. But semantically, it looks similar to what std transform is. One, just like parallel for each and parallel for, though, there is no ordering guarantee in which will happen first and which will happen next. That's the concurrency world. But be it known that, but for a pair of begin iterators or begin one, begin two, depending on which version of the API you're using, it'll be in a lockstep process. Now, this functor can either be a unary functor or a binary functor, again, depending on the signature. So, like, for example, if you had B1 and end1, B2, and output begin1. Now, this functor will be a binary type, which takes two type T's and returns a type T as well.
Okay.
Now, this is very similar to how, this is very similar to the look and feel of std transform. Under the covers, we use structured task groups and do the fork join, which is similar to how it is done in the parallel for each. Parallel reduce, this is similar to std accumulate in its look and feel, but there are some subtle differences. In std accumulate, you have something like begin one, end one, and you have an init value, and you have a func. This is, in a very high level, these are begin and end iterators. In a very high level, this is what it looks like. But because of the complexity of the problem domain, we needed to change a few things here and there. Like, for example, first of all, similar to parallel transform and parallel for each and parallel for, the order of execution is not quite guaranteed. The second thing is we require this to be not an init value, but an identity value. And I'll come to that in just a little bit. And secondly, because of the way we do, we can bring out parallelism or concurrency in this particular problem domain, we expect the functor to be associative in nature.
Okay.
And the reason for that is we actually do a two-step reduce. In the first step, so how std accumulate basically does it is if I can just go ahead and erase that out here. Std accumulate, let's say you have 1, 3, 5, 7, right? These are your numbers which you're trying to accumulate over here. And the default operator is plus. So the default function is plus, to plus. So at step 1, what it does is it accumulates these three, and this is what you get. At step 2, it accumulates these two, and you get 9, 7. And step 3, and you get 16, accumulating these three. This is basically how std accumulate works. But with parallel accumulate, you cannot break this down easily to get parallelism. So what at step 1, sorry, so for the same 1, 3, 5, 7, of course, the identity value over here was 0, so in the first step, this is how it was incorporated. So over here, let's say the identity value was 0 again, right? In this case, it's not the identity value, it is the identity value, it's not the init value, right? So over here, you can basically group them this way first. So in step 1, and we probably do 1, 8, and 7 over here. And in the next step, we basically do this, 15. And in the third step, we do this. Make sense?
Okay.
So because of the way we do a command, notice that in this particular case, we're combining all of the same types. But there could be, in this two-stage process, there could be a time where your range combine produces a different type than your step 2 of your reducer. So we expose different overloads of the methods based on that. And that pretty much covers the parallel transform reduce part of it. Now, apart from that, we also have three versions of parallel sort, which would be shipping as part of the sample pack.
Can I just make one comment here?
Absolutely.
I just wanted to emphasize one point that Vinod mentioned here is, can I take my program and replace all invocations of std transform with parallel transform?
Probably not,
right? And the answer is yes, you cannot, because it may be actually slower depending on the amount of work that you're doing in your transform function. It may just not be worth parallelizing, or it may be unsafe if your transform operation has any side effects.
Right.
I think this is an important point, that we do not guarantee that it will work correctly. The programmer is still responsible for making sure that all side effects are appropriately protected with logs.
Or you have dependencies, internal dependencies.
Or you have dependencies on the order of execution.
Yeah. Sure.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that goes back to what we talked about last time in terms of there's the coding, and then there's the education, right?
Yeah.
And clearly engineers should kind of think about these things. I mean, they're not all copying and pasting HTML.
Right.
So good point. It needs to be stressed often. You need to know when to go parallel. We hope that at this point people have some sense of when they would do that, but, you know.
So remember, we're giving them a productivity tool.
Mm-hmm.
Parallelism and any sort of concurrency is hard. And you have to know what you're doing. What we're doing is giving you tools so that you don't have to write as much code. And hopefully, you know, we'll have less errors because you're not writing as much code.
Yeah.
And more importantly, that you'll have more time to think about, well, should I be?
Mm-hmm.
is this right to be run in concurrently?
Yeah.
And so I hope to make their jobs easier, but in easier from the context of how much work and how much writing of code you have to do. You still have to conceptually think about what you're doing.
Of course. Absolutely. They are engineers.
So...
Okay.
One particular place, since we're talking about parallel transform and parallel reuse, let's just dive into it a little more in detail.
Okay.
One particular place where I'd potentially use it is if I was trying to, let's say, get a word count of all the words in a bunch of files. So my the transformer basically takes a vector of string, string, and this is basically a set of file names, right? And then my output would probably be a vector of unordered map of, say, string comma count. Right? Now, so what this basically means is, so what this would look like is I would have a list of files, which is passed into, say, parallel transform. So, parallel transform. So let's say we call this v, v dot begin, v dot end, and then we need to pass in output. So we call this out vector. So out dot begin, and over here we shall define a lambda, which basically takes in a string. String, this is file name, right? And within the lambda, what we basically do is, well, we get the file, we'll get the, we open the file, read it and basically populate a unordered map with every string, with basically just incrementing its counter. So this way you get the word count per file, and then when this is automatically, and you see it return map, right? And this basically gives you this output. So this is the mapping part of it. Now, if I were to use parallel reduce on top of this, with this output, so now my output for my reduce is this. Let's just, so that we're not confused, we have this as n. And then my ultimate output is basically an unordered map of string, count, size d, right? Because keep in mind, this one has this vector has the maps of every the word counts of every file in it. It's consolidated. Now we need to reduce that, and that's where parallel reduce comes into play. So we basically say parallel reduce in dot begin in dot end, and then we need to give a identity function, identity value, so we'll just say unordered map of string comma size t, and then we'll give a function of which, well, we in over here we basically we give the function here again, pass it a lambda. Return a, sorry, over here there needs to be out.begin as well.
They don't have IntelliSense on this white.
Not yet. That would be cool.
And that would return another map of string comma 60. And over here we just basically consolidate where we reduce all the different things within this function and return that value.
Okay.
This is one particular way we can use parallel transform, parallel reduce to kind of, to chunk up work and do large amounts of work.
Sure. Spread it out over the available resources.
Right,
so
right.
This is sort of similar to what Watson does, right? Except it's using Google Map Reduce. But I mean, the point is, I'm just kidding. The terminology is the same. But you take a big chunk of data. You know you have, in not CPU world, say you have 8 cores to work on. You spread it over evenly. Work gets done. Join it back up. Give it back. And everybody's happy.
Right.
Now, if we had 2,000 cores to work with, now we're talking Watson.
Right.
Right? You have 8,000 cores to work with. We can start getting crazy.
Right.
With what you're actually doing in parallel to compute some interesting answer or a bunch of answers that you then turn into the answer you're looking for.
True.
Cool, man.
So the last thing in terms of the algorithms I would like to talk about is parallel sort. Now, parallel sort is very similar to std sort. It is an unstable sort. It's basically a parallel version of quicksort. A std sort is a quicksort or heap sort, depending on some conditions. It's usually implemented using intrasort. So parallel sort, for 80% of the cases, parallel sort is the way to go. If you have a huge array to sort, again, this is with what Arthur said, there is feasibility involved over here. You have to make sure that there are no races and stuff. But let's say if you're trying to sort an image, right? If you're trying to sort a billion pixels.
Okay.
Sure.
Something that's going to require a lot of computation.
And when you're trying to sort something like that, when you use parallel sort and when you have a sufficient amount of cores, you have the parallel quicksort break over and do the work for you, thereby getting you faster performance. But as you increase the number of cores, there is a bottleneck when you talk about the initial splitting stage of quicksort. So there are other alternatives. So parallel sort is probably useful for it's going to be used about 80% of the time. So that's the parallel version. Now, because of the initial bottleneck, which is the problem with the merge, which is kind of sequential in that sense for the quicksort, we have introduced another version called the parallel buffered sort. Now, keep in mind this does take in O of n space to avoid that contention so that you can't parallelize that effectively. But this is a faster alternative for that. For cases where you can, for integer types, where you can hash a function instead of using a comparator, we have another option called the parallelytic sort. Which basically takes a hash function and hashes it to the corresponding bucket. This also takes O of n space. And I have a blog post out there which defines when you could probably use what.
Sure.
So this pretty much sums up. Let me just quickly write. Would you like me to write some code to show
sure,
you?
Sure, but I would also like to just slow down for a second.
Sure.
And talk a little bit about, the implementation details.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what that really means, right? So, like you said, std sort, you can expect, and we actually do talk about how that's implemented on channel 9.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about what is going on? Does this go back to, so underneath the covers, are we talking about tasks?
Yes.
So that's what I'm asking, what you're doing under the covers here.
Mm-hmm. Not PPL tasks necessarily, but structured task groups.
Structured task
groups. This is something which we released in Dev10. And we, there are multiple complexities over here, whether it's a random access iterator or forward iterator type. So depending on which iterator it is, we basically branch our algorithm. And this is there on the header file. You can go take a look at it. But effectively, we make some smart decisions saying, with a random access iterator, we know what the bounds are. So we chunk it up beforehand and say, fire it off. And then we balance it out. Very similar to how... it's a divide and conquer method, very similar to how parallel 4 would use, how you'd implement this problem with parallel 4, or parallel 4 each.
Okay.
And that's basically how parallel sort does it. Now, with parallel buffered sort, I don't want to delve into too much of code over there.
Sure, sure, sure.
On the implementation, but
sure, sure.
We use, yeah.
No worries.
Okay.
That's good. Well, I mean, because it's interesting.
Okay.
But like you said, you guys are giving people the code, man.
Right.
So read the code.
And
did you comment the code?
Yeah, we can always do better. But
right on.
Most of the comments end in a semicolon. The concert extras also has a demo sample that Vinod wrote, which can actually demonstrate these three different swords.
Great.
Over different types of data types, which I don't know if you want to go into why you would choose one or the other, but his blog posting goes into that. And
excellent.
So
right.
Cool.
The demo has a C# interface which calls into a native DLL, which basically does the sorting. And there's a blog post which defines, it's an experiment that I conducted with different data types to say, you know, which is better, when do you pick which sort.
Perfect. So we're going to link to that blog post.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And
excellent.
The last thing I wanted to talk about is concurrent honored maps and multi-maps in sets and multi-sets. And this is very similar to the std unordered maps and stuff. This allows you to concurrently add elements and search for elements, but we do not provide a safe way to erase elements or remove elements from it. This is consistent with how concurrent vector works at this point in time. Just to make a quick distinction, map is a key-value pair, which is where the key is unique. Multi-map is where the key may not be unique, and likewise, a set is just a key, which is unique, and a multi-set is where keys are may not be unique. And where would you typically use something like this?
Yes.
So let me just write some code. Let's say I have to build a dictionary app, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I will have. So let me have a concurrent unordered map of, say, string. This is basically the word and a vector. Let me make this a concurrent vector. Concurrent vector of strings. These are the meanings. One word can have multiple meanings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll call this cmap. Ideally, I can work this out as a concurrent unordered multi-map as well, but we'll just go with this for now.
Okay.
So let's say going to tasks, let's say I have a task of void type, which, let me fire off task, or better still, let me have a vector of task void type, and back back, and I'll say task void, and I define the task over here, which basically goes ahead and says read from file, and basically over here does passes alphas and C map as reference over here, and it does a C map of word dot push back meaning, and that's it. This would not be possible, and this is just how you would update the dictionary, right? Let's say I'm concurrently trying to find stuff from the dictionary as well. So it's effectively a task again, task void, which basically does, of course, this is a while loop. Task void, which basically does cmap. Just does auto val equal to cmap.find word. And this returns a pair, and this is consistent with how it would be, it would work with unordered maps. It's just that this now you can execute this in parallel without locks, and you get more concurrency. None of this has locks in it, or at least it does not have locks when calling into user code. So,
but underneath the cover, it must have.
Man. Yeah, there are some spin weights and stuff. But predominantly, this is in the actual definition of locks. We don't hold locks while calling into user code, so you should see some good numbers when you use them concurrently.
Now, are you seeing, like, for example, when you were showing this example, it kind of reminded me of the days, the Windows Update back in the days when I first started the company. The Windows Update was implemented as, at least on the server, a bunch of dictionary objects and a lot of memory,
mm-hmm.
a lot of machines.
Sure.
Blast through it with an algorithm, obviously a native algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see people using this stuff on the server? To me, this makes perfect sense for server scenarios where you actually will have things like, you know, 100 nodes because you can send the stuff off to work on different machines, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my question is, this is safe for server? You're seeing people use this kind of stuff on the server?
Oh, yeah.
The client,
oh, yeah.
Just four cores?
Yeah, certainly, but within the same machine, right? Not
right.
In a distributed way.
Yeah,
not in a distributed.
I think
way.
What you mentioned is distributed,
yeah.
Right?
You're
partitioning it into multiple machines.
Yeah, but this
doesn't do that. This is all within a single.
I understand.
Single process.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you want to write a distributed application, that you're going to sit there and create a concurrent an ordered map or vector or something along those lines, where you're sending a whole batch of packets out. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
When you start adding locks to protect your data structures. If they're just a std data structure, you might want to take a look in the concurrency namespace because we may have provided one for you that scales better.
Okay.
So, you know, concurrent queue, concurrent vector, concurrent unordered map, set, whatever. If you've been putting locks around a std set, well, maybe we'll be a better choice.
Okay.
In that particular case.
All right. Now, in terms of your testing, because you've been probably pounding on this stuff, clearly you super understand it.
Yeah.
How much does it scale? It's like, it's one thing to say, you know, if you have 48 cores at your disposal, does it scale at that level 48 times faster, or however you want to think about it? Because at some point, isn't there a distinction between really how much scalability you can get after a certain level?
Right.
So can we talk about that?
Right. First of all, I mean, I don't want to get this the wrong way, but we're definitely better. In the experiments I conducted, this is definitely outperforms a std locked or a locked version of an unordered map or any of its kind.
Okay.
In terms of how well it scales, it depends on the experiment itself, on whether there are lots of producers or lots of inserts happening, or whether lots of finds happening, or what's the ratio of that happening. I have yet to post a blog post on it. There are some findings I have.
Okay.
But in a nutshell, we're talking about a 20. I conducted the experiment on a 24 way, and I found, you know, 18 or 19x, around between the 18 and 19x speed up.
Cool.
On that. So,
versus the locked.
Yeah.
Nice.
Versus the locked version.
So. Good. So I really hope people play this, take it far.
Right. And of course, they have the code.
Yes.
Right. So one of the things is you can go and take a look at this code. We want to hear back from you how you like it, if you've had any problems with it, if you find a bug. We definitely want to hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is an opportunity for us to be able to give stuff out to the community, as well as the community to be able to kind of give us feedback before we have a new release of Visual Studio.
And since they have the code...
If
they find the code, they can fix it and then say, hey, I fixed this bug.
Send
the fix to you?
Send us the bug. Send us the fix.
Don't,
I like that. Microsoft 2011. Don't send us a bug, send us a fix. Actually, that sounds good to
me. Send me the bug.
And then you'll fix
it. Tell us about it. Now, we have actually in the past received bug fix requests on our extras pack, and we're usually pretty good about turning those around quickly. If somebody finds something and can reproduce it and let us know.
Right on. So. Well, you know, download the code, people.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to share with us today?
That pretty much sums it up.
Excellent. So, hey, we're going to come back, visit you guys again as we march forward. And again, you release these how often?
You know, we don't promise a release cycle.
Okay.
I think we've been averaging a little more than every quarter.
Okay,
you
nice.
Know, every 4 or 5 months, maybe we update this. Maybe we add some more samples or we add some components like this. I think we brought this in November of 2010. So, you know, we try to get stuff out there as we build it.
Cool. I like that model. I'm sure developers really appreciate it, too. Hey, nice to meet you guys, talk to you.
Thanks,
thanks for the detail.
Oh, thank you, Charles.
Take care. Thank you. Cheers.